Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
Happy Friday, reunited again, and it feels so good for the first time in, what, a month? Bill McCutcheon is back in studio. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, big, beautiful bill is what the president calls it. Some members of Congress call it that as well. Bill, what are your thoughts about the passage of said bill? You've been a critic of Mike Johnson, but I think you're coming around on the young man.
Coming around on Johnson. So for the listeners, so they understand, this is step one. The Senate will pass a different version of the reconciliation bill, and then there will be a conference committee between the two houses. So we're not at the final bill stage.
Point of clarity, because I have forgotten this. So Senate version, conference, then does each chamber have to pass it again? Or because it's a spending bill, just the House does?
No, both do. Okay. They both do.
So we're 25% of the votes.
We're 25% of the way there. And, you know, little civics 101, all appropriations bill have to originate in the House, which is why the House did it first. I give Mike Johnson credit. I wasn't sure he would be able to pull this off. But I also give President Trump and a guy named James Blair, who doesn't get spoken about much. He's the Deputy Chief of Staff for Legislative Affairs in the White House. This operation is so much better than their 45 operation, their first term. They understand how to use the leverage of the White House to get the votes they need to get the things they want. And they've been successful at it. I mean, not a lot's passed so far. Let's be clear about that. But getting this thing over the hump with the Freedom Caucus against you at first and then with you at the end was a big, big deal.
Is this budget bill, now obviously we don't know what it's going to look like at the end, a serious challenge to the federal deficit? Because, you know, there's this promises of cuts, but
I would say this one is a tiny challenge to the federal deficit. And I'm hoping that's where I would hope it would gets better. I hope that gets better over time with the Senate. I would like to see more spending cuts in the Senate version and ultimately in the one that passes. But I give him credit. You know, the Freedom Caucus, there were $300 billion in cuts in the original bill. By the time it passed yesterday morning, I guess, early, it was $1.5 trillion. So Freedom Caucus gets some credit. And to their credit, they came around. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know I took after Mike Lawler from New York because he was grandstanding about this SALT thing. And as a conservative,
state and local tax deduction.
State and local tax deduction. It benefits only super rich people in New York and in California. That is where rich people got a break, and it's in blue states. We should have never done it, but we did it for him. And at a point, he wasn't going to accept the deal. And I called him a fool on Twitter, and I think I was right about that, and he came around.
Did he respond to you?
He didn't. He didn't. But I also said to the NRSC, or the Congressional Committee, you got to play offense. You have two choices in politics. You're either playing offense or you're playing defense. And on Medicaid in particular, Republicans are horrible at this and always play defense. They can play offense on this entire bill.
No, they can't. This bill, bill is an abomination. It is the largest upward transfer of wealth in American history. It is huge tax cuts for the affluent. It is cuts to health insurance and food.
What new tax cuts
and
for
food
the
security for poor Americans. And the only actual conservative sticking to his guns on this, Thomas Massey, here is what he said. We are not rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. We're putting coal in the boiler and setting a course for the iceberg. That is how bad this is for the long-term fiscal health of this country. Let me ask you something, listeners. If you kick 10 million people, minimum, off of health insurance in this country, does that mean they stop getting sick? Or does that mean they get more care in emergency rooms, which makes your health care costs go up? If the energy tax credits go away, does that save you money on your bill? No, it's going to cost more because the developers are still going to move forward with developing wind and solar technology, they're not getting the tax credit anymore, so you're going to pay more for it at the end. This is going to raise costs on the rest of us so that they could give another huge tax cut or extend a tax cut, sorry if it's not a brand new one, to those at the very top.
Words matter.
Because we have discovered the Republican red line.
So who actually got a new tax cut in this
bill? Donald Trump.
Who did?
Let me talk about the red line. When Donald Trump says we should have a new special tax bracket to raise taxes on the uber rich, that was the line that House Republicans would not cross. Bill, you just said it yourself. You know this is bad politics, that they're doing handouts for wealthy people in California and New York and cutting food stamps and cutting Medicaid.
We're going to come back to that for sure, because that's going to take a full segment all by itself. But the only people who got new tax breaks were working people. If you work in the service industry and get tips, There are no tax on tips in this bill.
And you
also, if you work
more.
Overtime like my old man used to, there are no taxes on overtime pay for the first time in history. Those are working people that are going to benefit from them.
It's a fair
rich
point.
People.
It's a fair point. And that is part of why, like, if they had just done that, okay. But the distribution of the tax cuts and the benefits to those at the very top
tax
is
cuts
going
that already
to
exist.
Dwarf.
Tax cuts that already exist.
You guys keep talking about the debt and the deficit. When are you going to get serious about it?
I'm not sure. Hopefully soon.
Yeah. Bill Clinton is the only president in our lifetime who has done
but
anything.
These are not new tax breaks.
Serious about it.
The SALT is new. It's a bad thing. I'm against it. I hope it gets reduced in the Senate. And the taxes cuts for working people, those are new. I'm totally for those. I think those are great.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation on this bill because there's a lot there. What are the 1,100 pages? All right, he is Joseph Pecky, Bill McCashin, Steve Scafidi. I am Kristen Bry. Stay with us on Point Taken.
The Political Power Hour, hour of the Point Taken Show. Kristen and Steve and our regular Friday guest, Bill McCashin, back from his road trips across the Midwest.
Working. Just a working guy.
Yeah. Although you're not working. You're going to golf after this today.
I have my golf stuff on. Yeah. I'm going to Black Wolf Run with
yeah,
my
guess
sons.
Who's most likely at this table to benefit from the tax provisions and the BBB?
Well, I doubt it. I didn't in 2017.
That other voice was Joseph Pecky. I mean, we could go around and around on who's benefiting from this bill, but I'm going to go back to the deficit because it matters to me. And that's the challenge, I think, for the Senate, sort of. Ron Johnson, you know Ron Johnson very well.
This is where Johnson and I are totally
aligned. He's talked about this for decades. This is a risk. Every time they do budgets like this, where they say they're going to save, but they don't, we're talking $36 trillion, then $45 trillion. It's dangerous.
Well, this is, so I read this morning in Tangle, my favorite newsletter.
Tangle.
Which it is. It's great. I highly recommend it to anyone. They cover what the left is saying, what the right is saying, and then Isaac Saul, who's the founder, gives his take. So I read this as a comparison this morning. If passed, this spending bill would cost more than the 2017 tax cuts, the Pandemic CARES Act, Biden's stimulus, and the Inflation Reduction Act combined.
Whoo!
And here's I pulled it up. The Congressional Budget Office, which is the nonpartisan referee. What they are saying is this bill would lead to increased assets for the richest Americans while reducing them for the lowest income households through cuts to federal spending on Medicaid and food aid.
I'm telling you, for working people, it's going to be a great Christmas.
You know, I've heard the lower incomes are impacted. But if don't disregard the impact of no taxes on overtime if it goes through and no taxes on tips. That could neutralize or offset that loss.
But here's the other thing. When did the timing of everything? Everything doesn't start until either after the midterms or in 2029.
Some of it starts immediately.
What starts immediately and what starts later?
Well, the tax cuts that were passed in 2017 just continue, so that's immediate.
But like the Medicaid cuts and
stuff.
But
even work requirements and some of these other – this is where I'm not aligned with the Republicans in the House. I think they should have sped up some of these things and had them start sooner. And maybe that'll still happen before the process is over. The other thing I'm upset about this week is John Thune allowed Democrats off the mat on the no tax on tips. There is zero reason to bring that to the floor and allow Democrats to vote on it by itself, where it passed 100-0, because it's going to be in the big, beautiful bill where they're going to all vote no. And you have seats like John Ossoff in Georgia that they are targeting next year. Why would you let that guy vote yes on that? It's the stupidest thing that happened all week long. But Thune is going to do what Thune's going to do. Hopefully he's going to deliver the way Mike Johnson did. I don't like all of the staggered start dates. The one thing that bugs me and that Ron Johnson is 100% right about is even Republicans are allergic to spending cuts. I don't understand that. I mean, our deficit is ginormous, $35 trillion, and our deficit is $3 trillion or $2.5 trillion. We have to start working on that.
And here's the other way this is going to cost every single American. The way the markets are reacting, the bonds, the long-term treasury yields, interest rates are going to go up, which means it's going to cost more to buy a car. It's going to cost more to buy a home. That is also a trade-off. And if you are working poor or if you are middle class, that is another offset of you know, things like no tax, no taxes on overtime, which, by the way, if you lose your job, you don't get overtime. This is going to devastate building trades, construction workers. I thought your party was trying to go get those folks. Instead, you're going to put them out of work and they're not going to have overtime to not get taxed on.
Oh, they're going to have plenty of overtime.
I know you were concerned about the delay on some of this stuff. Is the delay in implementation of some of these cuts to some of these governmental programs, is that purely political? Put it out
of course
after.
It is.
Because you just said,
yeah,
like, oh, Christmas is going to be great this year. Because a lot of the things that are in effect, the working class doesn't come into effect.
But Papa Grinch said you only get
$2 for Christmas,
not 30.
I understand why you have to do that. But like Byron Donald said this week, who's now the leading candidate for governor in Florida, that the DOGE cuts, which are not in this bill, are coming next. Well,
what, to codify?
Yeah. You could have done those in the same bill. Right. It just requires a little bit of effort and a lot of political courage, which is sorely lacking in D.C. on both sides.
You mentioned DOGE. This is sort of unrelated, but should DOGE be subject to open records, freedom of information?
Yes.
See, that's a no brainer. Why is this controversial?
Well, it is controversial because Donald Trump is trying to stop watchdogs from being able to see what they did.
That's the red flag of red flags to me.
Yeah, it should all be transparent. I mean, that's the whole point of it, right? We're telling taxpayers, here's where your money was actually being spent. They ought to know how we got there.
I could change my mind on Elon Musk if you actually showed me that you're actually doing real things, not just putting it on a website and then not telling us what you're actually doing.
Not just tweeting about it?
Yeah. To me, that's fake stuff. Fake news.
I just want to say I admire Bill's consistency on this. I called him out on this question, and he answered it in the text chain, and here it's the same way, which is you got to let people see the work.
I don't know why this is hard for Republicans.
Well, what are they hiding?
Well, I don't think they are hiding anything, which is all the more reason to be transparent about it.
But then why, if they're not hiding anything, why would they not want to be transparent about it?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that.
All right, so last point.
Thank God that among the last minute changes to this bill was language that changed tax deferred savings accounts that you can set up for your kids from calling them MAGA accounts to Trump accounts. Mm. These are the most serious people doing the most serious business of governing in our country.
And no taxes on tanning beds.
Seriously?
For us, yeah.
Oh, my God.
They're getting
into
the XX
tax. You're excited about that?
Yes, my pale butt. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. When was the last time any of us were in a tanning bed?
It's never.
Never.
I would say 25 years at least. I think I tanned before I went on a Florida trip once because I was white as a ghost.
I have done it. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Well, long time.
At least those.
Now you can afford one in one of your homes.
All right.
On that note, let's take a break. We'll be back with Joe, Bill, Steve, and Kristen after this. All right. Because we were kindly asked by
because we are responsive to the listeners of this show.
We're here for you.
We're here for you.
We are going to talk about one more aspect of this bill. So welcome back. Point taken. I'm Kristen. He is Steve. Bill McCoshin, Joe Zepecki. And so I have not read the bill. I'm going to be honest.
Oh, you didn't have time to read
1,100 pages.
Remember when Republicans would pile up the big bills and go, this is an abomination. And then they just do it.
So is this officially the Festivus segment?
No, I just want...
For the listeners, there's always one segment where it's 3-on-1 against Trump. Is this it?
No, but I think it's something that is in there.
I don't think Trump knows this is in it, actually.
I don't know if it will stay in there. But there is a provision in this budget that basically seeks to limit the ability of courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, from enforcing their orders. So it says, quote, "No court of the United States may use appropriated funds to enforce a contempt citation for failure to comply with an injunction or temporary restraining order if no security was given when the injunction or order was issued." So it seems like it's basically taking the teeth away.
It seems like they want to do a tyranny.
Right?
I mean, there is no defensible argument for two branches of government assaulting the powers of the third. This is in the Constitution. Checks and balances matter. We know that the Trump administration is violating court orders on the deportation stuff. This is an attempt to say it doesn't matter if they disagree with the court, if they just refuse to follow a court order. This is terrifying for what it means for the long-term health of our country, and it is an insult to the Constitution.
I don't know how this got in there. I don't like the idea. I think that we need some court reform. Not this necessarily, but I don't think a district judge should be able to have a national injunction on anything. I think that ultimately is the role of the United States.
Wasn't what the Supreme Court is hearing right now?
Kind of.
They had the oral arguments within the last week on that.
Yeah. they had a version of it last week where they're getting a better case that will deal with that over the next couple of weeks. So we'll see if they actually do something on that. But I mean, if the court, the U.S. Supreme Court orders something, that's the final say. That's how our system was set up.
Since we've talked about the bill for this whole half hour, what do you think the timeline is for the next part of this story?
So they're still talking about having it done by the 4th of July.
But that's when the president wants it.
Seems like a long time.
He wants to sign it on the 4th of July.
Yeah, it seems like a long time to all of us and people in the real world. That's 5 weeks. Why would it take 5 weeks to get through one more House plus a conference committee? Because there will be a different bill. The Senate bill will be different than the House bill, and then trying to manage those differences. And it's still about math. You need 50 votes plus the vice president in the Senate. You still need 216 or 217, depending on how many are there, to get it through the House. So it's about the math. But the hope is the 4th of July.
Who are the Republican holdouts in the Senate? We obviously know Ron Johnson is
Hawley.
Not a huge fan. Hawley, for a very different reason, not a fan.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if McConnell's a holdout just because of his dispute with Trump.
So that's three. Now you're at 50. Now
yeah.
And then you start looking at...
And Hawley will come around.
And then you start looking at the Murkowskis of the world.
Hawley's argument is about Medicaid, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Which, I think that will get worked out. Let's see. He tends to be a Trumper, and I don't think he'll be able to handle the heat in Missouri from Trumpers if he's on the other side of this.
What about Murkowski?
Murkowski, I wouldn't count on her vote. But I think we can get the main lady. Why am I blanking?
Susan Collins.
Yeah.
So disappointed.
All right. We got lots more to get to in the next half hour with Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, our strategist friends who join us every Friday. Don't forget, coming up at 11:35, our final Salute to Service presented by Waterstone Bank. I had some great stories this week. I love telling the stories. And Kristen and I have had fun meeting all the folks. We had a great one yesterday. You can check it all out on our social media. All the platforms, WTMJ.com, all the stories, all the links are there to the incredible stories of people doing great work each and every day. Coming up in the next half hour, I see we're going to talk about the GOP convention, what happened there. Bill, I'm sure, has some thoughts. And some of the legal things we were just talking about, what's happening with the Trump administration's battle with some of the things they want to do versus the Supreme Court. Lots to talk about in the next half hour. Kristen, what else you want to throw in the next 5 seconds? Have a day. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to a long weekend. Welcome back. Political Power Hour of Point Taken on Friday. And you know that means Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky in the house, in the building, in the studio. Kristen Bry alongside as well. All right, so the conventions, our state conventions are starting for our two respective parties, Democrats and Republicans. Republicans had their event, and Bill... Brian Schimming's still in charge.
I think there was a floor action to try and change the Constitution to potentially have a vote of confidence that failed miserably. It never actually got to a vote. Brian Schimming works hard. I'd like to see him raise more money for the party. But the Republicans, if we're going to be successful long term, we got to find a way to bridge these gaps between the third party entities like Turning Point USA, who's involved in Wisconsin politics, or America's PAC or Americans for Prosperity. They all have sort of their own little piece of the action on the Republican side. And honestly, it leads to uncoordination and it leads to inefficiency. And so it's a bad thing. So Schimming's big role, in my opinion, for the next 15 months is to bring everybody together to the table to try and win in 2026.
Two big races, governor's race and Supreme Court.
Right.
Those are going to be on him as the leader to get those.
Well, listen, flipped. We have an incumbent this time on the Supreme Court. If we lose that, then that is a absolute rejection of.
On that point, do you think Bradley is the most challenging race for conservatives to win in a Supreme Court race?
I've said on this show, I think she's our strongest candidate.
Really?
And first of all, it has to be a female. She's an incumbent. It's very hard to beat an incumbent.
Well, you've also pointed out she's sort of unabashed in the way that, like, Janet Protasiewicz.
She will fire up the base. If you are a Trumper and you were one of the 600,000 people that did not vote in this past spring election, she's somebody who would get your attention.
What did you think about that slight from Wisconsin law where they highlighted the opponent and not the fact that Bradley was also a graduate?
I doubt it was purposeful, but it certainly wasn't helpful.
One was 95. So yeah. Taylor's a 95 grad, I believe, from law school.
Is.
And
Chris Taylor, who just announced this
week,
which we didn't talk about.
And then Rebecca Badley is 96, but they only talked about Taylor being a proud alum. It's like,
Oh, from UW-Madison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad taste. poor taste.
It was poor choice.
My only quick note on the GOP convention, I think it's worth noting that the delegates to the Republican convention voted overwhelmingly to do a strict enforcement of the 1849 abortion ban, not the Ron Johnson proposal to put it before the voters. That is still where the base, which is the beating heart of the Republican Party, is on, you know, fewer rights for women and girls in this state.
Thankfully, party resolutions mean nothing. I think that was a mistake.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say about our convention is my old boss, Tommy Thompson, lit the room on fire and
as he always
gave
does.
A barn burner. And yeah, it was fun.
All right. On the other side of the aisle, there was an endorsement. I don't know if we didn't happen before last week's show, did it?
No.
It happened Tuesday. So Ben Wickler, former chair, endorsed your opponent in the race.
Well, outgoing. He's still
outgoing,
the chair today.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Outgoing chair.
Lame duck.
Yeah. Thoughts?
Listen, I've said this elsewhere, and I'll say it here. You know, Ben had pledged to remain neutral in this race. Nobody forced him to do that. During his sort of farewell tour announcement, he committed to the delegates that he would remain neutral. And I thought that was important because it is the beating heart of our party who have the power here and get the votes. Why he went back on that is up for him to answer. But what I am committed to doing is making my case to the delegates, which is that, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. There are things that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin does very well. And at the same time, boy, do Democrats have a lot of work to do. I'm committed to doing it. And I got to tell you, in the 72 hours or so it's been, the response continues to be overwhelming, that people understand we need to change the way we operate. And so, onward.
So our liberal texters would say of what Ben Wickler did, that he lied.
Well, I think it's that's for him to, he explained to Dan Schaefer, among others, that he changed his mind. People are allowed to do that. I do think it is fair to point out, Democrats have a credibility problem. And when leaders in our party say they're going to do one thing and then they do another, I don't think we can be that surprised when people say, why should we believe Democrats?
That's a good take.
So I'm going to defend Joe here without hurting him.
Well put.
I think Joe got in because Ben said he would stay neutral.
Yeah.
And so you want a fair field. And to Joe's last point, I think Democratic voters are now wise to the idea that they're, quote unquote, the party of democracy. But when it comes to elections, not so much. Whether it was taking the election from Bernie Sanders in 2016, or it was fixing the primary process to ensure Joe Biden got through in 2020. There are just too many examples where Democrats say one thing and then disregard their voters
altogether.
Well, even
what's happening with David Hogg at the
right,
vice chair,
exactly.
re-election exactly. That it's not going to happen.
Look, I'm not a Democrat, but I know Joe well enough that I know his messaging when he goes out, and it's actually something that Democrats should listen to because
I think so too.
There's sort of a wake-up call.
I hope they don't, for our sake. But I
appreciate the honesty because we've sort of talked about some of the things that are asked and some of the things he talks about at his presentations, and I think you're right. There are challenges for Democrats at the same time as they're trying to advance their agenda and policy. So,
do you
no
feel
question.
That? When you're talking to people, that once you actually get a chance to meet people in person, that they're resonating with what you're saying?
Oh, yes.
So do you feel like the challenge is just getting to talk to enough people before the election?
Yes. That was always going to be the challenge. And that's why I've been running around like a head with its chicken cut off and why I'm going to keep doing that. I was in Washera last night, heading out to Western Wisconsin this weekend. We're running through the tape and making the case.
You getting Quick Trip points for all these?
I hope.
How many Quick Trip chicken sandwiches have you eaten?
I wanted one last night, but I went with the quesadilla instead, which is a newer item.
The tenders
because
are the
they didn't have any
I would
of
not
the spicy
Wisconsin gas stations could do a quesadilla well.
It's fine.
Yeah, their
good
grilled
stuff.
Cheese is fine too.
It's not gourmet.
All right, after the break on the Political Power Hour, there will be lawyers and judges and court decisions and courtrooms and all the things that go with that. After this. On 620 WTMJ.
Send lawyers, guns, and money.
Oh, I love
lawyers,
it.
Guns, and money.
Yeah.
What could go wrong? All right, welcome back. Point taken. I am Kristen Fry. He is Steve Scafidi. And as always, we are joined by Bill McCashin and Joe Zepecki on Fridays. So let's talk a little bit about court cases. Is there the decisions are rolling in?
And Fast and Furious. They are making the Supreme Court earn their paychecks.
Certainly.
It's about time.
So I guess the one that we were just talking about in the break, as far as a recusal, Amy Coney Barrett recused herself from a case as far as allowing the first religious charter school.
Right.
You seem to know why she recused herself.
There was a report this morning that she is friends with the consultant to the Catholic charter school. She has no direct relationship with the Catholic charter school in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But she's friends with the consultant who has been advising them. So I don't know if that's what made her. That's not a direct conflict in my mind. It's a potentially perceived one.
Right. And I hats off to her.
I know. That's what I was going to say.
I think that is the right thing to do. I was telling somebody else this week. My favorite Supreme Court case in history is Buckley v. Valeo, which was the campaign finance thing that was overturned by Citizens United. But it said in the decision that even the appearance of impropriety and corruption is a problem in a democracy. And so hats off to Amy Coney Barrett.
That's been the belief since our founding, right? But it hasn't always been.
Well, not since 2015 when Trump rode down the elevator.
Want to know how rare this is? There's been more than 28,000 cases in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. There's only been deadlocks 183 times.
Wow.
It doesn't happen that often. So I'm a big fan of Amy Coney Barrett now. I think she's exercising her brain power.
I'm not going that far.
I know you're not.
I would say in the last, this year, specifically in 2025, she has seemed fairly principled.
I believe that. I think she, like Brian Hagedorn in the state of Wisconsin, I know some conservatives don't like Brian, they used her gray matter, and I like that.
Here's the big picture thing. There's a reckoning coming. Because the Trump administration is unquestionably violating court orders. And we talked about the provision tucked into the big reconciliation bill. The Trump administration, a federal judge ruled Wednesday, used the word, quote, unquestionably violated a court order when it abruptly deported seven men to South Sudan, suggesting that administration officials may have committed criminal contempt. And so we are coming, like, the water is about to boil. If it's not boiling yet, this is going to boil over. The Trump administration and Stephen Miller appear to want this fight with the Supreme Court to say, you say one thing, enforce your order.
What I don't understand, because only one of those men was Sudanese.
Mm-hmm.
How are we allowed to send people to countries that they are not from? This is the same thing that happened with how many Venezuelans we sent to El Salvador.
50 of whom never committed a crime. They were illegally deported, rendered.
How is that not just
country.
Human trafficking?
It is.
Bill?
What's the risk for the administration? Because these are serious things, and I think this is the biggest story of the rest of this year, what happens with these court cases and how Trump and his administration react to them. This is big stuff.
Yes. Trump got slowed down by the U.S. Supreme Court on the Alien Enemies Act initially, but then a different court last week essentially green-lighted him to be able to use that again. So that is not totally resolved. I think the goal is, you know, to get as many of the illegals out as possible. Ideally, criminals completely are the ones that they're going after. They had no due process coming in, but everyone wants them to have due process going out.
You're not arguing that they don't get due process.
I'm arguing that they ought to be. We as a country ought to have borders. We are the only country.
Let's not answer the question.
Well, here's the problem, Bill. They're not going after the criminals. Every week we see another story about an immigrant in this country who goes to their scheduled meeting with immigration officers because they are going through the process and they are put in cuffs by ICE and marched out. Do we think the people who you call illegals, the ones that are the problem, are the ones that show up to their immigration appointments? Give me a break.
Here's what I can tell you. More than nearly two-thirds of voters are okay with Trump's immigration policy.
Principles only matter when they're inconvenient.
They
want
him to be able to remove people who are here illegally.
Folks who are going through the process deserve the benefit of the doubt. And if you show up for your appointment to meet with an immigration official, you should not be frog marched out in cuffs. End of story. Those are not the folks that even Trump voters want out of this country.
Because my understanding is a lot of people wanted criminals out. Because there was story after story as far as people in the South, like having in-laws who were undocumented. But they're, no, not you. Not you. They're not going to. They're only going after the criminals.
Yeah, but the questions on the polls are not about criminals. They're about mass deportation. Do you support Trump's mass deportation of people who are here illegally? And it's over 60% say yes.
I had a conversation with an individual, I'm not going to name him, has relatives who are, by your standards, in this country illegally. I asked him, are you worried about this? He goes, yes. They've been in this country for almost 20 years. They're worried about it. That's something we all need to think about. Quick break. Final segment, always the grab bag. Sapecki, McCosh, and Brian Scafidi on the Point Taken Show, 620 WTMJ.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
I mean, with this group, I'm not sure politics are ever out of our systems. No. But nevertheless, as we move forward for the end of this hour, Bill McCashin, what is in your grab bag?
Well, I like the spice that we've had on the show the last 3 weeks. It brings a smile to my face and hopefully some joy to the listeners. I'm going to give my grab bag, I could go two different ways here. I could talk Medicaid or family. I'm going to talk Medicaid today. You will hear for the next several weeks while the Senate's dealing with this that 4 to 7 to 10 million people are going to get kicked off Medicaid. Let me explain who the biggest cohort of those people are. They are people that are childless adults, able-bodied, who could work. All the work requirement is 20 hours a week. It includes potential applying for jobs. It includes volunteering in your local community. It's nothing. So the listeners are very clear about this. The work requirement for welfare programs actually originated in Wisconsin under Tommy Thompson. It became a national model that Bill Clinton, a Democrat, put in the Welfare Reform Act of 1996. It is not too much. I'm a Catholic. It is not too much to ask people to give a little something back. Let's give them a hand up rather than a handout. You would have to believe that these 5 million people have zero work ethic and there's no chance that they could find a job, both of which are false. I don't believe that. I think they have a work ethic, and we know there's at least 7 million jobs available today. So as you're listening to all these people, quote unquote, getting thrown off Medicaid, it's baloney. Look at the facts. People can work. It's not too much to ask them to get involved.
The facts are that these folks are working, and what the administration is them to do is now twice a year go and recertify. So if you are someone who is in a assistive mobility device like a chair, instead of going once a year to recertify, it's a condition that's not going to heal. You're not going to get any better. And they are working, but now they have to take time off of work. If they miss too much work because they have health challenges, they can get fired. That is the problem. It's the burden of this is going to force people who are eligible for Medicaid off of it.
All right. Do you have a grab bag?
We only got a minute. For a rebuttal.
Well, when you go full politics in your grab bag. What I would like to do is ask everyone on Monday, on Memorial Day, to take a little time to reflect about the people who give it all for this country and those who are willing to do. I know that Memorial Day is about those who we have lost in the line of duty, and anyone who signs up to serve this country and go in harm's way deserves our eternal gratitude and appreciation, as do their families. And so I want to leave with that. It is the most American type of service, and we should all think about what it means to be an American, particularly in these times.
My rebuttal to that is if you're in the Milwaukee area this weekend, go by the War Memorial. I think they have 27,000 flags up.
They've already started placing them.
Yeah, it's an awesome sight, if nothing else, and I drive by there every day. It is always great to have both of you gentlemen in studio, so I'm glad you're back, Bill. Hit them straight. Enjoy the weekend. Remember Monday and what it stands for. Kristen and Steve, we're hanging around for another hour. We're talking some Harvard after the break.
I like them apples.
News is next.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
All right, one more hour for us until the weekend is here.
Three-day weekend.
So we were going to talk about Trump blocking Harvard from enrolling foreign students. But, you know, as it was wont to happen on this show, news moves fast. And that has already been blocked by a judge. We looked up at the CNN Chiron, and in fact, Judge Halt's Trump administration ban on Harvard's ability to enroll international students, which I shouldn't be surprising.
No, I mean, the Department of Homeland Security, that's Kristi Noem, I believe, the secretary, called the move a warning yesterday to all universities. Well, courts have already flipped that around. And let me just say this, and I think we agree on this one. This is just a dumb idea. If someone commits a crime like a felony, yeah, they should not be part of a university. They should be in jail, or if the case of an international student, they should be.
But last time I checked, protesting, not a crime.
No, not in this country. Some countries, yes.
Some countries, yes. Like, but for now, still not here.
Not here. So
I guess it depends on how you're protesting. Yeah, certainly certain states have tried to outlaw certain kinds of protesting.
But why would we want a university, any university, to say to a group of people, often who are, let's be honest, some of the smartest students in that university.
Especially the ones who are going to Harvard.
Yeah. You're not welcome here. That makes us dumber as a country. It certainly makes the university dumber. And I think probably most people can understand if you have less students, it's less likely that universities are going to thrive, which I'm a big fan of universities doing well. I'm not a hater of post-secondary education. I kind of like that process. I went to college. I think people should go to college if that's your thing. And you should learn something about each other. And here's the other thing about college. This is the thing about diversity that people miss. I learned this lesson intimately when we had a shooting in Oak Creek. I learned that there was people that I had no knowledge of. That was the Sikh community.
Yeah, of course.
And I understood on that day and every day since that there's a reason why meeting people who are different than you is important. Because they teach you things, not just about them, but about yourself. That's why these relationships that domestic students and international students have on campus are important. I'm not even talking about the intellectual piece of that, the education piece. It's just the relationships. Because when you know somebody, it's a bit of a lecture, I apologize for that. When you know somebody personally that's different than you, you learn something about that relationship and what the differences are. But more importantly, you learn pretty quickly they're a lot like you in a lot of different ways. That's the lesson of diversity. So I know that it's a bad word now. That's stupid. Diversity is actually a good thing, especially on college campuses, because that's when the brain's still forming.
Look at you being all woke.
Yeah.
It's like the wokest thing I think you've ever heard you say.
It's so stupid. We are arguing about stupidity. That's one, the one thing I hate about politics and all the nonsense is we argue about things that make no sense.
I've never asked you this before, but do you feel like when you look back at your life and like there was a before and there was an after, is the day of the shooting kind of a before and after moment as far as like who you are as a person and how you see the world?
Yes, because I didn't see the world the same after that. I learned about a group of people. Many of whom came from India, the Punjab region of India, which is like the northern part where heavily agricultural. Many of those people came to the United States for agriculture, but they became business owners in a lot of different businesses, restaurants, gas stations, and they did very well, and they established their families in my community. But here's the thing. This is what the difference was. I didn't know any of them, and I was the mayor of the damn city.
Why do you think that was?
Just I didn't meet them on their terms.
Yeah.
And the one thing that changed after that was, one, I started going to all the places of worship, whether it was Faith Baptist, whether it was Parkway Church, whether it was the Catholic Church, the Lutheran churches, the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin. And I got to know those people.
Who has the best music?
Sikhs. It's like 3 hours long.
But best music?
They're going to blow you away. Right. Yeah, and the singing.
I'll go with you sometime if you want to go. I've never gone to a...
Oh, it's an amazing... And you know, here's the cool thing. They feed you after.
Ooh.
And also the best tea in the business. It is unbelievable how nice those people are. And I've said this over again. I wrote about it in my book. They are the most compassionate group of people I've ever met in my life. And that's the thing about all of these stories. You know, we can pretend that there's others that we don't care about, illegals and what, you know, whatever term we want to toss out there. But these are people, ultimately people. They're good people in a lot of cases. They're not all good. But meeting those people on their terms is sometimes a good thing.
What did Mark Jaramillo say? Is that you have to accept people,
yes,
all of their blemishes?
Wasn't he brilliant?
Oh, God. I want to hang out with him more.
I do. I want to have him like on the show.
Maybe he'll be a regular.
We should get him on. All right. We're just getting warmed up.
All right.
Speaking
of diversity.
Hour. Yes.
We're going to, because we've never really talked about this,
we
but
haven't.
It is the 5-year anniversary of George Floyd's death. So we're going to reflect a little bit on what's changed, what's the same after this on Point Taken.
I believe this is Supertramp with my ears. One of my favorite bands of all time. Saw many times. Alpine Valley.
I feel like you have a lot of favorite bands.
I do. That's because I do like music.
Do you guys play a lot of records at your house still?
I have a turntable that my daughter bought me, and I have a stack of albums sitting
there. But here's the question, because we have a record player, and I feel like we
don't... I actually use it.
Yeah.
I just bought it's an old album, Christopher Cross debut album. Love it. Sailing is on that, one of my favorite songs of all time. I do play it, yeah.
That one?
Yeah.
Come sail away.
No, that's not
that. Who's that?
That's Sticks.
Sticks, okay.
Yeah, all right. All right, you're going to ask me something.
All right. So, it is 5 years since George Floyd was murdered in Minnesota. And obviously we know in the aftermath of that, it was a crazy year already because it was during lockdowns and COVID. And there was a surge of a lot of people might say that was like the surge of DEI and wokeness, even though I think it was a lot of it was already starting to rise ahead of that. But that certainly amplified it on calls for, we got the campaign for defunding the police, or, you know, having different police reforms, but also different corporations wanting to have more inclusivity, and a lot of racial reckoning happened that year. And so I guess before we talk about what's changed since, what did, because that was before you and I knew each other, what was your reaction when everything happened?
I mean, that's 5 years ago. I think what I said...
You're on air.
Yeah, I think what I said then is I did not like what happened to George Floyd, because it points out some of the horrible things that this country has been guilty of over the almost 250 years, and it highlighted. And, you know, the amazing thing about it, maybe that's the wrong word, but the sort of the reality is we can now watch this unfold in front of our own eyes, where, you know, 2 decades ago, probably not.
Well, it was like Rodney King was a shock. Yeah. Shock to everyone, even though it was not an unusual occurrence. It wasn't cell phones.
My takeaway from George Floyd is, and I hope I said this at the time, is it taught us about ourselves and how we react to things and how we view each other. And again, sort of tying into the last conversation, George Floyd deserved to be treated like a human being that day, and he wasn't. He was treated like an animal, and he died as a result of it. He didn't need to die. He should be alive today. What happened after that, we saw the rise of Black Lives Matter and massive protests.
Well, Black Lives Matter already existed. But...
Yeah, the rise of it. I mean, the power of it beyond anything we'd ever seen. And we certainly have the stories from Kenosha and the aftermath where people died again for no reason. I hope that it teaches.
But that wasn't George Floyd.
No.
That was another shooting that happened here.
But it's sort of that same idea. What I didn't like about it, one of the reasons I do salute the service, is I think it for a lot of people, it was their image of police became that's only. And that's harmful. We saw the removal of SROs from schools and sort of the pushback against all of that. What I hope it teaches us is that all of us have to understand those are hard jobs, but also people's lives need to be respected each and every day. They may look different than you. They may act different than you. They may be doing things you don't appreciate, but doesn't mean they deserve to die for it. And I think that's the lesson of George Floyd. The woke thing, you know, we go back and forth. I hate when we sort of make cultural decisions based on events like this, because I think it sort of dumbs it down. We should always be woke, because we should always treat each other with kindness and respect. I guess that's my message.
All right. Do you think much has changed?
I do.
Do you think enough has changed?
Probably not enough. But when I talk to police chiefs and fire chiefs, I talk to a lot of them, especially this week. They all understand the relationship probably more clearly than they ever have before, about how they have to work within their community. Not within their community. That means going out. Just like I talked about getting with members of the faith community, you can know they're there, but to actually participate in their lives, to understand what's challenging people, why they act the way they act, or, you know, act out, those are real decisions that people have to make. So I think this is a day we have to think about for a long time. George Floyd's always going to be in our history. What do
Breonna
we do with
Taylor?
What do we do with that? And how do we get better as a country? That's the thing. That's why I think you and I are positive in what we try to do on this show, because we understand there are things that scare the hell out of us or shake us to the core as a country. But we know that ultimately, I think we can figure it out. Most people, we had this conversation earlier during break. Most people are reasonable.
Most people are reasonable. Not online necessarily, but I think when you actually talk to them face to face. I just found out, and this may be old news, so excuse me if I'm repeating something that everyone already knew, but I just found out yesterday, the Brewers finally brought back their baseball card program. So
yeah, very cool.
And so because my husband has always said that, he's like, I want them to bring back this program, because it was the police officers will carry around baseball cards, and it's an opening conversation with kids in the community to have a different relationship with police officers.
Yeah.
That's a step. That's a good step.
It's a great step. It was very popular.
So thank you, Brewers.
Yeah.
For stepping forward on that.
Brewers always seem to figure it out. It's a great organization. All right, we got one more segment this half hour. Don't forget, Salute the Service coming up. We got a great story today. Sort of on a twist today. You will hear from the officer in a different way, and his father's going to be in studio. So it's a great final sixth honoree, because we had a bonus one yesterday. We had a twofer of our Salute the Service presented by Waterstone Bank. So one more segment, then we'll get to the bottom of the hour news for you kids. That's 11:30. Kristen and Steve, 620 WTMJ.
Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. If I were an Oscar Mayer.
Oh, I love that song. I grew up with that song.
All right, so thanks to the Morning Brew for pointing this out.
Which is a great read, Morning Read, by the way.
Yeah, those are my two favorite morning reads. Tangle. I know Bill was like, rolled his eyes when I said that, but it's very good. I highly recommend it for people who like politics. If you want to, you like reading, getting newsletters on politics of the day. And then also Morning Brew is a great newsletter as well. So they always start the newsletter with a fun little tidbit of something that's happening today. And, you know, Oscar Mayer Wiener, Wisconsin company. Mm-hmm. My dad interned there, I think, when he was either in college or when he was getting his MBA. He interned there. He didn't eat hot dogs for like a decade.
Oh, really? Did he drive the Wienermobile?
No, I don't think he would fit in it.
He's a big dude.
He's a big dude.
Yeah.
All right, but something is happening later today that has not happened in over 10 years.
What would that thing be?
All six of Oscar Mayer's Wienermobiles are going to be in the same place.
Isn't that wild? I thought there was more than six, to be honest. I thought like at least a dozen.
I think they're broken up by region. So the Wienermobiles are going to race against each other at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in the inaugural Weenie 500, which is a promotional event ahead of the Indy 500, which is happening on Sunday. The stakes could not be higher.
The hot dogs could not be higher.
So it's regional, like I said, it's regional hot dog supremacy of who's going to win. So each Wienermobile will represent a different regional hot dog. So there's the New York dog, the slaw dog, which is the Southeast, the chili dog, which is the South, the shy dog, which is the Midwest. Don't love that, but whatever.
Chicago. Yeah.
I know. And then the Seattle dog, which is Northwest.
What is the Seattle dog? Do you know? Like, what's on it? I got to
I don't know.
That.
And then the Sonoran.
California?
Dog for like Southwest, yeah. And then but here's the thing. They test drove one of these things in 2010, and it went from 0 to 60 miles per hour.
Quick.
In 24 seconds.
Oh, not quick.
So it doesn't quite have the pickup.
It's like a horrific crash, and there's ketchup all over the place.
I just can't imagine all of it, because they're not small. So those things, like,
they're big.
Trying to whip around the track and not hit one another feels kind of dangerous.
I looked up this. You know what a Seattle hot dog is? What they call a Seattle dog? It's a hot dog served on a bun with cream cheese.
That's like sushi with cream cheese.
That sounds like a Boston thing.
Like, are you a sushi person?
Oh, I love sushi, yeah.
Do you ever get rolls that have cream cheese in it?
No.
It's so, every place, it's so gross.
Oh, it's a Philadelphia roll. I think that's what it's called when you put cream cheese
and
salmon in it.
That's why I don't get that one.
Ugh.
I like California rolls, to be honest.
No, that's fine. Although, yeah. I don't think that you're going to get that in Japan.
Probably not. But the cream cheese in a hot dog thing is wild. Now, have you been? I actually, in the old days when I was a kid, we went to the 500 track, Indy 500 track.
I've never been.
And they let you drive your car on it. They don't do that anymore. So my dad, we're wheeling around with
How fast did he go?
I don't even remember. I was like a little kid.
Okay.
It was just the wildest thing because it's banked.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, State Fair Park.
Yeah.
Where the State Fair is. When you're there early, sometimes they used to let you drive on the. I'd fire that sucker up till as fast as I could go on the track.
What do you feel like the fastest you've ever driven in a car is?
Oh, 120. My Buick LeSabre, like 1972.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't. If my dad's listening, he's not going to appreciate that. Yeah. Which was fast and dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. My buddy Jack Baldwin races. He raced for Porsche, and he's retired now, but he ran at Road America. Unbelievable how talented those drivers are.
Yeah. Are you going to see the. Are you an F1 fan?
Yeah, I watch it occasionally. I'm not a fan, but...
Are you going to watch the new Brad Pitt movie when it comes out?
Probably. I like Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who doesn't like Brad Pitt? Probably his ex-wife.
Which one?
Well, he's got a couple, right?
It's Angelina Jolie and Jennifer Aniston.
That's an A-list of ex-wives. I mean, who's better than that? I mean, who's got a list? Maybe Frank Sinatra. He had some amazing ex-wives.
That's actually a good question.
Mia Farrow. Ava Gardner. Gardner?
Who
Gardner.
Else?
He had some good ones.
That's a good question.
One of the producers just said I sing like Frank Sinatra. Do you believe that?
You've said that yourself, haven't you? Didn't you do like singing Valentine's one year as a fundraiser?
Yeah. That was fun. We had a blast. Raised a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's the commitment I make to radio.
Do you want to set up the salute service that's coming next?
It's our sixth, because we had bonus ones yesterday. So we have our sixth and final recipient. That was a twist today. Our recipient is sick, but he's calling in. Now, you know what the cool thing is?
the person that nominated his father, who is a former fire chief in our area, is going to be here in studio to kind of walk us through that. We got a great feature. Jazz has done an incredible job. She's killed it on the features this week. And you know what? All on her own. I did the interviews. You helped on a couple. Jazz put them all together, and they're brilliant. So we'll play the final feature in the first segment. Celebrating Salute to Service by Waterstone Bank and all the great partners that we've had, the Packing House and Botana's Restaurant, the Air and Water Show, which is coming up this summer. Lots of fun stuff.
Hearing the stories and recognizing the heroes in our lives that continue to make a difference. This is Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank. Here's Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
All this week we've had just great stories to share. I always look forward to this week, and I know it's a lot of work, and producer Jazz she's really nailed it on just the production side of things, but the people have been amazing. The stories are incredible. And we got another good one for you today. Now, there's a twist to the story. Now, we interviewed both the nominee and the nominator, I think it was last Thursday. Yes. Mike, let's get Mike's mic on there. There we go. Now you're
yes,
good.
Last week Thursday we were here.
That voice is Mike Jankowski, former, by the way, fire chief in Hales Corners.
That is correct.
So you know of first responders.
I do.
Now, your nominee was your son, Matt Jankowski, who is a Franklin police officer.
Yes, he is a Franklin police officer.
And as we were talking about this in the interview, which we're going to play in a second, there's always that emotional piece. And I can see you're already doing
it. I do.
But I'm going to ask you simply, well, actually, I'm not going to ask you. Let's play the piece, because I know that here's the twist. Matt is sick today.
He is.
Very sick. But he's joining us on the phone. But I want him to listen as he waits, because we'll bring him in the second segment, to the piece that was put together by Jazz, because it's a sort of a nice intro to the conversation and the story. And really the reason why you nominated your son, Matt Jankowski, police officer in the city of Franklin, which I know very well, right next to Oak Creek. Here is that story.
Hi, my name is Mike Jankowski. I nominated my son, Matt, for Salute to Service.
Hello, my name's Officer Matthew Jankowski. I'm with the City of Franklin Police Department.
He got sworn in September of 2022.
Beyond just the fact that you're proud of your son, why did you nominate him?
My wife and I are going through the Citizens Police Academy right now, and just hearing the fantastic job that my son is doing from his sergeants, from other officers that he works with, I felt compelled that he deserved to be recognized for this award.
You were planning to be a nurse before a police officer, right?
Correct, yeah.
And so what inspired the change?
I really just wanted to give back to the community I was born and raised in. Just having that day-to-day contact with citizens, you're able to have that positive contact. And one of the things I'm very big on is community relations. So just being able to have that connection with the community and be someone they can trust.
What surprised you so far since what you thought the job was going to be versus what it has turned out to be?
Probably the different number of calls and the variety of calls that you go on a day-to-day basis. Most recent call, there was family gathering. Unfortunately, on Mother's Day, someone passed away. So at that point, we were there. We were trying to comfort them in that time of need, as well as trying to work our way through that call and just be someone that family member could count on.
Being in public service for all those years, we go to a variety of different calls. People's best day, people's worst day. You figure out what they need at that time, how to take care of them, how to help them. Matt has heard a lot of the stories from me over the years, and I see that he is a very caring person and truly wants to make a difference out there with people. I hear from people that he has had interactions with that they've been very positive. He's assisted them in a very good manner. And that is positive outlet for not only police officers, but the Franklin Police Department as well.
How does a young guy, how old are you?
I'm 24.
How does a young guy of 24 have the sort of the wherewithal to be able to deal with those situations that, frankly, a guy of 66 wouldn't be comfortable doing?
It's a very tough job at the end of the day. I'm very grateful I'm able to do this job. It really just comes with experience, learning the different roles that you're able to do, provide, and different avenues to help others succeed.
What does Salute to Service mean to you?
Salute to Service means Matt came from a family that always gives back. I was a fire chief for many years. My wife is a social worker. We chose to serve. And seeing my son in this position, serving the community, giving back, is doing just a fantastic job. sorry, I'm getting choked. Salute to Service, to me, just means that you're able to help, giving back, that at the end of the day, people can count on you, you can count on them, and that overall you can just give back to people.
Matthew Jankowski, police officer, City of Franklin. His father, Mike, nominated him. And one of the Matthew's going to join us on the phone in a second because he's really sick today, but he is going to join us. I always tell people the nomination is, it's not just as important, but it's important. And I'm going to read a quote from your nomination that I think tells the story. And this is one of the reasons I chose Matthew. Matthew builds real relationships with people in our community. He mentors youth, organizes events, and is an approachable officer who can shift the whole dynamic between the police and the public. And Chris and I were just talking about this earlier. That piece is really, really important. I'm going to let you collect your thoughts, Father Mike. And we're going to hear from Matthew Jankowski, our sixth honoree for my Salute to Service, presented, of course, by Waterstone Bank. Lots more to come right after this.
Back to Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service on WTMJ, presented by Waterstone Bank.
All right, let's meet the officer. Now, I said at the beginning, he's pretty sick today, but these guys are warriors. In this case, Matthew Jankowski, his father, Mike Jankowski, was also served the public in the role of a fire chief in Hales Corners, and I think you were also in the fire department at Franklin too.
Yes, I was.
Well, your son Matthew joins us on the hotline. First of all, congratulations, Matthew.
Thank you for having me, sir. I appreciate it.
So, your dad is like the proudest dad you could possibly be. And it is hard to, you know, when, first of all, people don't like to listen to their own voices, but to hear the story. But one of the things your dad said to me that stands out to me, you're only 20. I asked you during the piece, you're only 24 years old. It takes a real commitment to be a police officer, any first responder duty. What was the thing that you said to yourself, like, why am I doing this? Why would I want this to be my career? What was that motivator for you?
I think one of the big things for me was just being able to give back to the community. At the end of the day, I want to be someone that somebody can count on. And I think this is a perfect job overall to do that. At the end of the day, people always call you in a time of need.
Well, because we've touched on a little bit in the piece too, because I thought it was so interesting, because you were clearly called to service from the get-go, that you originally thought you wanted to be a nurse and then changed course. But looking back at it, what was the difference between what you thought being a police officer could be and what it's turned out to be when it comes to fulfilling that desire to be part of the community and to serve people?
I think one of the main differences that I realized was just a day-to-day call volume and what you do on a day-to-day basis. At the end of the day, there's no routine day. There's no routine traffic stop. Everything is always changing on a day-to-day basis, and it's just always changing.
And Father Mike, I mean, fathers love their sons in most cases, and I know you're so proud of your son. But I mean, that sort of passing the torch, fire chief, and then now a police officer—that's a big deal for a dad.
Well, as a fire chief, it was kind of a gut punch that he wanted to go into the police service.
I was like, isn't there like a notorious rivalry?
What do you mean you want to go and be a cop?
I didn't think about it that way. I'm talking about public service. I mean, you got to be so proud of yourself.
I am. I am extremely proud of Matt. I hear so many compliments from people that he's had interactions with. His sergeants have said what a good kid he is and how he treats the public with respect and really just tries to make a difference. And, you know, when Matt went into policing, the climate was not the best. And
because it was 2021.
It was 2021 when he told us that he wanted to become an officer, and he just went full steam with it and absolutely loves it and is doing a great job, and I think he is making an impact.
And Matt's joining us on the phone because he's sick today, and he's been doing a lot of specialized training, which we appreciate, because I mean, it's never easy to be, you know, sick and then still, you know, out there talking to people. But one of the things I want to ask you about, Matt, is I know a lot of police officers, I know a lot of police chiefs, and I know a lot of folks on the fire side as well. And you all sort of share that 24/7, 365 thing, which I think is so amazing. Because a lot of us, you know, we complain about work, and then we're going to go check out. Like Chris and I were just talking about, we're going to check out for the weekend. But that's not the life, Matt, of someone who works in the job that you do. So you know, fill us all in on the role of a police officer in your community. And one of the things I loved about the story was, you grew up in the community you serve. That's not everybody who serves in those roles. Make that connection for us. What is it about this job?
For me, it's just there's so many different avenues you can take in this job in particular. It's not that you're just a police officer. Kind of like you mentioned, I was at specialized training this past week. It's called IPIMBA. It's a bicycle training. However, at my department, there's a bunch of different specialties I'm honored to be a part of. I'm on our crime prevention team, our suburban major incident response team, and a couple other ones. But at the end of the day, probably one of the main ones for me is being on our community engagement team. So with that being said, some of the events that we attend or we go to our shop with the cop, it's coffee with the cop, the bicycle rodeo, the games with the cop. At the end of the day, those are all those impacts that you're having, that one-to-one interaction with the community. And hopefully those are the ones where you can make that positive interaction and hopefully change someone's day and or outcome of police.
I love your attitude towards your job, and that's one of the big reasons that you're talking us today. It's what we see and what we hear when we have the Salute to Service Week. And again, thanks to Waterstone Bank for allowing us to do this every year, and all of our great partners at Packing House and Botanas and the Aaron Water Show that happens this summer in Milwaukee. I'm going to let your dad have the last word because, Matthew, we appreciate you, but you're sick, so go feel better. all your prizes and stuff will get to you next week, either through your dad or through the department. So, but thanks for your service, first and foremost, Matt, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Mike, you are the father in this situation. Last words about your son, who I know you're very proud of, and the fact that he's done a great job in his short tenure.
I was going to say, it's so early in his career.
What's your hope for him?
That he's happy. I want him to have a successful career and to be happy. And again, as I was telling you earlier, I've never seen Matt happier. And he thoroughly enjoys the department. He enjoys the people that he works with. He enjoys the interactions with the community and helping people out. It's just truly to see someone that young and have a clear goal of what they want to do and what they want to be. Is amazing.
Our sixth and final honoree for my Salute to Service for 2025. Again, thanks to Waterstone Bank and all our great partners. Great stories. If you missed any or all of them, available at WTMJ.com. Where else can we find those things? There's a banner you can click on. You can see all the stories. All of our social media has
Of our stories. Apple, Spotify.
And I encourage you to listen to them closely and how the officers or the firefighters or the individuals spoke about what they do. This is the reason I do this, because I want people to know these people. It's one thing to see him pass by on the street, or it's one thing to be stopped by him. Hopefully you're not going to have that experience, which is never, well, I shouldn't say that. You don't want that experience. But learn from the words they use, and more importantly, listen to the words that they tell you. I think that's the big message. But thanks to everybody. Thanks to Kristen. Thanks to Jazz. Thanks to all our great partners for Salute to Service. Another amazing year. We'll do it again next year. Always different stories, always different people, but you know what? I love doing it. We're going to do it again next year. Thanks for tuning in for that. One final segment with Kristen as we head off to Memorial Day weekend right here on 620 WTMJ.
This song.
I don't know what it
is. I do like Come Sail Away, though.
I actually saw this perform live many, many years ago, and this album has like 4 number one hits on it. And there's something about the sound of this album.
Yacht rock. It's like the epitome of yacht rock.
And I'm generally not, I mean, I have Sirius, but I'm not generally, I stack like the classic vinyl and some of the other channels, the Springsteen channel, the Sinatra channel. But something about this album and this sound just calms me.
Are you a smooth jazz guy?
No. Jazz hands?
No, like smooth jazz being, it's
yeah,
like,
no.
Yeah.
Kenny G?
Yes.
No.
Exactly. No.
I would walk away fast from a Kenny G.
That doesn't lower your blood pressure?
No, but. And that, I was going to make a weird jump, but there's something about Salute to Service that also calms me, because I realize at the end of this that we have some really great men. We didn't have women this year, and to the
we didn't have any women this
year.
We
almost had one, but there was a question of where that person was
located.
She lived. So that's a to do next year, because you almost always have women represented.
I feel like doing this with you for the first time this year is a reminder of. It's kind of what you say. Most people are reasonable.
Yeah.
There's so many of our access to other people's stories are usually on the fringe,
yeah.
Right? They're the most extreme. It's either saving people or doing a crime or the loudest voices. And just a reminder of really good people who don't necessarily make headlines all the time, who go to work and do their job and their purpose is to serve other people, and that there's a lot of those out there, but you just never really hear about them.
It just makes me feel better. So all the stories were amazing. Again, you can check them all out at WTMJ.com and all of our social media for WTMJ and mine and probably Kristen's as well. Thanks for tuning in this week. It was a great week of shows. We covered a lot of ground, and we're going to do it again next week. Shortened week. We'll be back on Tuesday.
Be back on Tuesday, and I'm trying to think of what we have. I mean, there's never a lack of things to talk about, but I'm not sure we have anything in the books yet to promote as far as guests coming.
We're always surprised on what we open our phones or our computers to, laptops to on a day of work. So safe weekend. Remember Memorial Day, all those men and women who died in the service of our country. It's an important week. It's not just the start of summer, but that's part of it as well. So plant those flowers. Do all the things you love to do.
And the rain is over.
Yes, the rain is. The sun has come out. Not tomorrow. Today. Point taken, Kristen and Steve.